So we were on the Gemara Daf Yechezkel Amud Beis, where the Gemara is in the midst of discussing what is it that the dead know about what's happening in this world. So we're on the first medium width line in the Gemara, and the Gemara tells the following. B'nei Rav Tzia.
I'm so sorry. Tell me again what page? Forgive me.
Yudches Amud Beis. First medium width line. B'nei Rav Tzia nafuk l'kiryasa. Rabbi Yechia's children, after he died, they went out to the villages, meaning they went out apparently to earn a living. And Yakur Luhu Talmudai, their Talmud, their knowledge of Torah, became very heavy for them, meaning they couldn't remember everything they had learned. And that's true in general. We focused on a particular thing, and the things that if we spend enough time away from some of the things that we spend time doing, we start to forget him. So that's what happened to Rabbi Chiya's children. Iyakor lo Talmudai, it's very heavy for them, their Talmud. Havu kamitzare, lad kure, they had a lot of trouble remembering what they had learned. Amar lechad lechavre, one of the brothers said to the other, yoda avun v'haitzara, our father knows, he must appreciate and know what we're going through. So Amar Le'idach, Minayada, the other brother said to him, how do you know? V'hoksiv yichpedu banav velo yeda. It says that it's not clear what the pasuk means exactly. It could mean that his children become heavy, whatever that means. I don't think it means that he become honored, but he doesn't know what's going on. The end of the pasuk, by the way, in Eov is v'yitzaru v'lo yavin lamo. They suffer, and he doesn't know what's going on. In other words, the mace doesn't know what's happening with his children. So Amar le'idach, the brother initially who had suggested suggested or raised the question about whether their father knew what was going on, he said v'lo yadad, does he not know? V'haksiv, a different pasuk from Eov, the very next pasuk, is ach bisaro alav yichav v'nafsho alav teval, but his flesh causes pain upon him and his soul mourns. So you see that the mace does know what's going on. So Amar le, so Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, kasha rima lemeis kimatz kimachat v'basar achai. A worm consuming the flesh of a deceased person is as painful as a needle being stuck in a living person's flesh. So you see that the mace does know what's going on in this world. So the other brother said to him, Amre bitzara ditu, or we say, bitzara ditu yadi, bitzara dachrina liyadi. The mace knows of his or her own tsar, but doesn't know what's going on to anybody else. Okay. So now the Gemara asks and tells an absolutely fascinating story. That's a story. But it's an amazing story. Velo, the mason don't know what's going on in this world. V'hotanya. We have a brisa, and this, I believe, is found in Avos Rabbi Nassim as well, pretty much, very much the same as we have it. Maseh b'chosid echad, shenosan dinar la'ani be'erev Rosh Hashanah b'shnei batzores. There was a chosid, a very pious person, who gave a dinar to a poor person on Erev Rosh Hashanah in years of drought. B'shnei batzores. So as you can imagine, he probably was giving away money that his family needed. V'hiknitatu ishto. His wife was furious with him. So, v'halach v'lan rebeis akvaros. He didn't feel welcome at home. So he went and he slept in a cemetery. I guess that's a place there aren't too many people who are going to bother you. So he goes to the cemetery. V'shama shtei ruchos shemesafros dolazo. He heard two spirits, two neshamos, talking, communicating with one another. Amra chada l'chaverta. One of them said to the other, chaverti, bo'i v'nashut ba'olam. Let's go throughout the world. V'nishma me'achorei ha'pargut, ma puranas ba'la olam. And let's see if we can hear from behind the curtain what puranas will be coming to the world this year. So it's Rosh Hashanah. And they want to find out what the judgment for the world is going to be. The word pargod is an interesting word that Rashi here says it's a mechitza hamadelas bein makom hashchina, and one of the Acharonim notes that you have to look, the fuller Rashi is, I think, in Maseches Yoma, I'm sorry, Bava Metzia. There's a paragot that divides between God, the Malkam HaShechina, and the Tzamarim, and the rest of the angels, you know, in the heavens. So they wanted to find out, let's see what's going on. What's the hak? What's going on? What's going to be in the world this year? Interesting, just from a linguistic perspective, does anyone know what the word paragot is? There's another word that we all should recognize. It may not have been the link between paragot, which also means a mechitza or a curtain.
Pargiot? No.
That would be interesting.
Parochet?
Parochet, yes. The word parochet is exactly the same word. They're cognate. You can see the pay and the resh are the same. And then the chaf and the gimel are the same sound, except for one is voiced and one is unvoiced. Do I have that right? Yes. And the tuf and the dalet are also the same, voiced and unvoiced. So paragot and parochet are exactly the same word. I think one of the targumim, Unklus translates parochet as paruchta, but I believe Targum Yonasan al HaTorah always translates parochet as pargoda. Okay, so anyway, so one of them says, you know, let's go find out what's going on in the world. So the other one said, Amra la chaverti eni yechola. I can't. Sha'ani kvura b'machtzela shelkanim. I am buried in a under a mat of reeds. Now, I'm not sure why that, what exactly that prevented her from going, but apparently she couldn't go because, I don't know, you know, it's not, is that kryptonite for the mace? I'm not sure. So, but she says, "Elalachias umashat shamas imrili, you go and bring me back what you hear." So holchahi, one ruach goes, the shatta, she flies throughout the world. Ubava amrala chaverta, her friend says, "Chaverti, mashamat me'achore pargut. What did you hear?" Amrala shamati, shakol hazorea beruvia rishona barad malka osam. There are three times to plant the three rains. Rashi says the 17th of Mar Cheshvan, the 23rd of Mar Cheshvan, and then Rosh Chodesh Kislev. And apparently what this Ruach heard from behind the curtain was that there was going to be Barad after the Vri Rishona. There was going to be hail. And that was going to destroy any of the crops that had been planted. Rashi explains that when you plant the crops at a certain point, they start to grow and they become hard. And then when the hail hits them, it destroys the crops. You see that at the end of Parshas Va'era by the Maka of Barad, where it says that that the Saora and the Pishta were damaged. Kiafi lo sena, because they came in early. But Kiasara viva Pishta gibo, but Tachitava kusemes lonuku. The wheat and the spelt were not damaged. Kiafi Gosena, they were late bloomers. They were still soft, and the barah, therefore, didn't destroy them. So basically, if you planted early this year, what the spirit heard, if you planted early, hail was going to destroy your crops. So this is obviously the equivalent, the modern-day equivalent of insider information, trading on insider information. Right? So this chassid now knows that if you plant early, the barah is going to destroy it. So what happens? Halachu v'zera b'rivi yashniyah. He planted later. Shekola olam kulo laka and shelo lo laka. So therefore his crops survived and did fine. Everybody else's crops got destroyed by the hailstorms. L'shana ha'acheres. My suggestion, by the way, halachically speaking, this is generally not, this is not appropriate behavior. The chassid, the first year, what he did was perfectly fine because there was no premeditated intent. But I believe that there are halachic sources that talk about the lack of propriety of going to listen, you know, to try to listen to what the spirits are talking about, to be lunma beisak faris, to hear what the spirits are talking about. But anyway, l'shana acheres, halach v'lunma beisak faris. He decided it was a good idea the first time. I got the insider information. So now let me go again. V'shama osan shtei ruchos, shemesapar so-and-so. They were talking again. Amrachad v'chaberta, boi v'nashut ba'olam, v'nishma me'achorei apargur, ma'puranis po la'olam. So the one of them said to her friend, it's the exact same conversation as they had the previous year. Amar la haverti. Amar la, she said, the other spirit said, haverti, my friend, lo kach amarti lach, eni yechola shani kibura b'mach zela shalkanim. I can't go with you. Ela l'chi'at, you go, umashat shamas, bo'vi imrili. Okay. So now, Holcha Vishata Ubava Amrala Chaverta Ubaa. The Amrala Chaverta, then her friend, the other Ruach that couldn't go, said to her, Chaverti Mashamat Mechorei Parvim. What did you hear? Amrala Shamati Shekola Zorea B'Revi Yashnia Shidap on Malka Osam. Anyone who plants it later in the season, some type of damage of shidafon is probably some type of mold or something is going to damage the crop. Now, Parent Rashi says that once the crop had grown to a certain point, if you planted earlier, it wasn't going to damage. So what happens? Of course, on this insider information, halach b'zara b'viri shona, he planted early. So you figure, shakala olam kulo nishtaf, shalolo nishtaf. Everybody else, I presume everybody else learned their lesson, did not consider regression towards the mean. And therefore, they planted later the second year, and their crops all were nishtaf. They got destroyed through shidafon and shalom nishtaf. So twice in a row, he hit the lottery. So his wife starts to wonder, Amrlo ishta, ma ishtake shokol olam kula laka v'shokol laka, v'achshu shokol olam kula nishtaf v'shokol nishtaf. Right? In other words, if this chassid were the kind of guy who just was lazy, or he decides he's going to plant Rabbi Yishmiya, he would have done it both years. And certainly after the first year, when he was successful and everybody else failed, he would have stuck to it, and yet he changes course. He plants early, so his wife says, okay, what's going on here? So he tells her what happened, right? He tells her, Sachla kolad varamalalu. He told her, you know, everything that happened. So what happens then? Lo hayu yamimu atin. It was not long. Achenafla kitata bein ishto shel oso chasid, uvein ima shel oso riba. Then the wife of this chassid, and as you can see, she has a little bit of a short fuse. So she got into a fight with the woman of the daughter of the girl who was buried, this young girl who was buried under the Machzela Shokanim. So the chassid's wife got into a fight with her. Nafla kitata beinam. So Amra La, she says, L'chiv arech bitcha she kavur v'achzel shokanim. Mocking, not a very nice thing to do. Let me show you. Your daughter's buried under a Machzela Shokan. Okay, so that's all. So of course, how did she know? She presumably didn't tell the daughter, the mother of that young woman, but that's what happened. L'shanu ha'acheres, third year, halach v'lon beveis ha'kvaros. The chassid goes back. Figure to work twice. Third time, should need no less the charm. V'shema osan rucho shenesapar zo v'zo. He heard both spirits talking. Amra la chaverti boi v'nashu fa'olam v'nishma mea chorei apargud ma'aparanis fa'la olam. Let's go find out what's going on. Amra la, she said, chaverti hani cheni. Enough. Dvarim shebeini levencha kvar nishma ubein hachayim. Our conversations of the last couple of years were already heard amongst the living. So how did they know? Alma Yadi. In other words, they understood the fact that the mother came along and must have obviously taken away the Machatzela Shokanim from her daughter. It means that somehow they realized that their conversation, that the one who said, I can't go because I'm buried under the Machatzela Shokanim, somebody had heard it, and that's why they acted upon it. She said, we're not supposed to be revealing the secrets of what's going on up here to people in the real world. Okay, so much for that. I can imagine somebody today on Wall Street, that'll be the newest thing. Someone's going to have an IPO of listening to the spirits to find out the direction of the stock market for the next year. So, okay, you heard it here first. So the Gemara says, bottom line is you see that they know. So so the Gemara answers, no, Dilma Inish Acharina Shachiv V'Azil V'Amar Lehu. Maybe it's not that the spirits knew what was going on in this world. Maybe someone who heard the story in this world, who was alive to hear what happened, then died, and then ran into these spirits and said, oh, by the way, that was very interesting. You were the two characters involved in this. You know what happened, and so on and so on. And that's how they knew. It didn't have to be that they actually knew real time what was going on in this world. That's what the Gemara suggests. Okay. One sees in this Gemara and in the upcoming Gemaras that it is certainly within our tradition that spirits have potentially an active afterlife. I don't mean to suggest that we know exactly what goes on in the afterlife, but there's certainly deeply rooted in the Jewish tradition that the Olam HaNeshamos is a very active place. In my in my particular family, my wife, who's studied, she taught a course on death and dying in the Jewish tradition a few semesters ago. And for many, many years, ever since we once attended a Levaya, and much to Rabbi Luchstein's chagrin, it was a little more the speaker who was a child. It was a little more a therapy session, which didn't quite have an organization. It was more stream of consciousness with many false endings. After that, my wife turned to my older son and said the following: "You don't have to speak at my Levaya, but if you do, remember beginning, middle, and end. And if you don't do that, I will come back to haunt you because I plan to have an active afterlife." So it is very much within the tradition, certainly, that the neshamos have an active afterlife. The Gemara, I'm not sure, comes to an absolutely, it sort of does, we're not there yet, it comes to a maskana, do the mason know what's going on in this world? But certainly there seems to be a degree of ambiguity, but they certainly seem to have an active afterlife in the universe.
But also, can I add something that my father, Olav HaShalom, used to say? When people would talk about the world to come and stuff like that, he would say, "We don't know anything about the next world. The only thing that we believe is that life does not end with the grave." He actually put it into the Yizkor prayer that he had in our original Yizkor booklet. You can still see it in our new booklet. We don't say it, but the prayer is still there. Life does not end with the grave, and dust is not the ultimate destiny of mankind. That's something goes on.
That's very powerful.
But Rabbi,
if
that's true, then how do we reconcile what we're learning this morning with, like, Mizmor Shir Hanukkah Sabayit LeDavid, which is filled with the contrast between the undesirable state of death and the much more desirable state of life? Or three or four or five references in the Hallel paragraphs articulating the same idea. And in Tachanun as well, we talk about things you can't do when you're dead. You know, the dead don't praise you and things like that. So the takeaway message is, it's good to be alive, it's lousy to be dead. So this seems to set up a much more ambiguous equivalency between life and death.
So that's an excellent observation. It generally raises the question, which I'm not going to address, which is why in our tradition do we assume, why is it that Tanakh doesn't explicitly address the afterlife? There are those who've argued that there are real references. I don't mean the Midrashic ones, but certainly it is not front and center. The Ramban talks about this, I think, in Parshas Kosai in the Tochacha. But I think the sort of, I'll call it, the standard answer is that we treasure life first and foremost because it's the only opportunity to serve God, to do mitzvahs. If I'm a simchafshi, there are no mitzvahs for the dead. And I believe, unfortunately, I haven't really been reciting Pirkei Avos for years, so someone might be able to pull the exact line in the Mishnah better. But there's a line about Yofeh, you know, Shah Achas Kosra Cholam Hazeh, doing either related to our mitzvahs, Mikocha Elmabad. There's a sense of being able to accomplish in this world, which you can't accomplish in the afterlife. You might know what's going on. You might see interesting things. Thank you, Rabbi Luchstein. Okay, so I think that is the sense of what those are. In other words, the loha mesi mihal luka. It's too late. Right? You can't engage in Torah mitzvahs and tshuva in the next world. It has to be done now. And that's why, that's the opportunity we have only to do while we're alive. It, by the way, in itself speaks to the power of the idea that we don't view the ideal mitzvos, the ideal of mitzvos is not the reward of mitzvos, it's the mitzvah itself. And hence, just to be able to fulfill God's command without any expectation of reward is greater than, it's supposed to be greater for us than any reward in Olam Haba.
So, Rabbi Leader,
yes.
In terms of sort of the place of this in Tanakh, Neil Gilman has a book called The Death of Death, which is about sort of the development of the concept of the afterlife as time went on in Jewish history. And his argument, if my memory is right, it was a long time ago, essentially is obviously not a firm argument, that there's not a single reference to the afterlife period whatsoever in any of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, that it wasn't until later, beginning very slightly at the time of the Nevi'im, when the cultures that surrounded us themselves had more robust concepts of the afterlife, that the afterlife was sort of born in Jewish thought, but that it actually has a very thin tendril of a home in sort of our original textual sources. So
let's put it this way. In Tanakh, the idea that the souls continue to exist is quite explicit, and there probably almost certainly is one reference in Chumash, except that it doesn't speak explicitly of a world of reward versus punishment. The idea of Sheol, that, and Yaakov makes reference to Ki Yered El Bani Al Bani L'Sheol.
El Bani Sheol.
Ola. I'm losing it. So,
you have a while to start losing it. believe me.
Ki Yered El Bani Avel Sheol. So the idea of Sheol, you know, it's not explicit what's going on there, but we do know from not such late sources in Tanakh, certainly, First Temple period for sure. We have references like that. Again, depending on what one does, even the whole prohibition of Doresh al Hamisim, and the Oven Yedoni, whatever one does with the Shmuel story, whether you have the rationalist reading or non-rationalist reading, whether it works or not, it certainly assumes that the souls continue to exist. What that world is like, a world of reward versus punishment, that's not explicit. But the idea of an afterlife, of the soul continuing to exist, that I think is pretty clear. But I haven't seen the book Marshall, so it's hard for me, you know, to comment on what his arguments are. So now the Gemara continues with a couple of more stories. The Gemara says the following. Toshma, we're on the fourth wide line in the Gemara. The Ze'iri have a mafkid zuze gabe ushpazichte. The Ze'iri had given money for safekeeping to his ushpiza, to the woman who provided him lodging. Ad'asi ve'azal le'beirav, he had spent some time in the yeshiva. It must have been close by because you certainly rented your quarters there, but in the interim, when he had gone to yeshiva, shchiva, she died. And now the problem is, where's his money? Ozal basra lachaser moves. He went after her. He followed her. He didn't actually follow her footsteps. He went to the chaser moves, to the cemetery, literally the courtyard of death. Amar la, he said to her, zuze heche, where's my money? So amar le, zil shaklenu mitose bitzinora didasha. She said, there's a place in the door where the hinge goes in. That's where I hid the money. Beduch plan, in such and such a place. The makom ploni. And the emalei, so that part is not exceptional. Right? This woman knew where the money was stored because she stored it in her lifetime and she took her memories with her. But then she said, the emalei le'ima, tell my mother, tishader li masrukai v'guvsai de'kuchla v'hadei planisa de'asya l'machar. This was not actually a literal request, but Rashi says it was to create agmas nefesh, actually, to reinforce the sorrow. This is a woman who died young. So she asked her mother for her brush and her container of eyeshadow. Masrekai v'guvsai d'kuchma. And she told her mother, she said, tell my mother to send it with so-and-so, which means that she knows that so-and-so was going to die. The way Rashi explained, obviously that person was going to die because they were already in the throes of death. They were a ghost face. And therefore, how did this woman, this dead woman, how did she know that so-and-so was about to die? Unless she knew what was going on in the world. So you see that the Mason know. So the Gemara says, no, maybe not. Dilma, Duma, Kadem Umachris Lahu. The Gemara in Perek Chelek, in Sanhedrin, in the last chapter, says that the name of the angel who is appointed over the dead, the name is Duma, which of course is a great name. It means probably silent or be silent or something like that. And apparently Duma makes an announcement before someone is coming that so-and-so will be coming, you know, tomorrow or later today. So maybe the way that this Ushpazichte or Ze'iri knew that so-and-so was going to die was not because she knew, because she saw that so-and-so was a ghost face, but rather because Duma made an announcement that the we'll be having a new member of the commune coming very soon. Now the Gemara says, Toshma, the Avuha the Shmuel, Hava Kamaskede Gabe Zuze the Yasme. Shmuel's father had entrusted with him money from Yesomim. And generally speaking, we take the money of Yesomim very seriously. There are all sorts of special rules in Bine Mamanos that apply to the assets of children of a minority age whose father has died. All sorts of legal protections that nobody else enjoys. So Shmuel's father, had been entrusted with money of Yesomim. And then what happens? Tinach Nafshei, when he died, lo have Shmuel gabe. Shmuel wasn't present when his father died, so his father wasn't able to tell him, go over his assets, right? And know where everything was, where the dollar bills were hidden, or where, which mattress they were in, and so on. So then, because Shmuel didn't know, Havu Kokari le bar achal zuzeh diasme, people would refer to Shmuel as the guy who ate the zuzeh and the son. Now, Shmuel had no idea. He wasn't taking the money, but he had no clue. So what happens? What does he do? Azal abasre lechatzer mavis. He goes to the cemetery. Amar lehu, belongs in a hesped. Be'ina Abba. I want Abba. Now, that could be read of one of two ways. Perhaps the simple reading, is his father's name was Abba. His father's name, he obviously called his father Abba too, presumably, because Abba means my father. But his father's name was Abba. So he said, Be'ina Abba. I'm looking for Abba. It's like I'm looking for Jack. Now, of course, I think there's another level here. Be'ina Abba, I want my father. Okay, so then they said to him, Abba tuma ikahaha. There are a lot of Abbas here. And again, I think you could read that two ways. Amar lahu b'ina Abba bar Abba. My father's name was Abba, the son of Abba. I mean, my grandfather's name was Abba also. Amrule, the spirit said to him, Abba bar Abba nami tuva ikahaha. There are a lot of Abba bar Abbas here. Amar lahu b'ina Abba bar Abba avua de Shmuel. Hecha. I'm looking for Abba bar Abba, the father of Shmuel. Then they knew who he wanted, which is kind of funny, but I guess they didn't recognize him as Shmuel. So they said, Amrulei salak l'misifta derekia. He had gone up at the moment. He wasn't available at the moment. He had gone to the yeshiva shamala. I guess they were having a shir. So I presume the Rebbe Shalom was the one giving shir. So his father wasn't there at the time. The whole, you could almost see this being put on as a play. It's a remarkable, remarkable agada. So in the meantime, while he's waiting, Adahachi, he's waiting for his father for the shir to be over. Chazya Lelevi, the Yosef Abaroi. He saw Levi sitting outside. He wasn't in the Masif to the Rekiah. Now, Levi was a pretty big Talmud Chacham. He was one of Rabbi Huda Nasi's main Talmudim. So Amar Lei, he said to Levi, am I Yosef Abaroi? Why are you outside? Why aren't you in the shir? My time, Alos Avkis, why didn't you go in? Why didn't you go up? So Amar Lei, because they told me, the Amri Li, he told Shmuel, the Amri Li, they said to me, Kol kihanach shanei de lo salikach lemisifte de Rabbi Afas, va'achlishte ledaite, lo ma'ainlinan lach lemisifte de Rekia. When Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi died, the Gemara in Ksubas, in the last parak tells us, last or the 12th or 13th parak, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi gave instructions for who should replace and take over his various positions, what his two sons should handle, and he wanted Rabbi Hanina to be in charge of the yeshiva. Rabbi Hanina did not want to be in charge of the yeshiva because Rabbi Efes was 2 years older than him. So Rabbi Hanina refused, but he couldn't sit inside the yeshiva. He had the good graces, but he couldn't sit. It would have made everybody uncomfortable. So he sat outside. He wasn't in the yeshiva. And Levi, because he wanted to keep Rabbi Hanina company, he didn't go into the yeshiva. He didn't attend Rabbi Efes' shir. So Levi tells Shmuel, the reason why they're not letting me in is they told me as punishment, all the years that you didn't intend Rabbi Apis to shear and you made him feel bad, that amount of time we're not letting you into the yeshiva shema. Okay. So anyway, that was the conversation. The hachi, while he's having this conversation with Levi, Asa Avuha, his father finally came, and Chazye, Shmuel saw his father, the Havakab Bachi, V'achich. His father was, you know, interchangeably crying and smiling or laughing, meaning sadness and joy at the same time. Amar Le, my time akabachis. He asked his father, why are you crying? Amar Le, Dila'agal ka'osis. Because soon, not immediately, not that day, you will be joining us. Meaning Shmuel was not going to live so much longer. The word agal, I don't know if anybody recognized that word that means quickly.
A circle. Igul.
Well, I don't know how that would mean quickly. It might be the same word, but there's a very, very...
Agalah, I mean, agalah, yeah. is a course.
Hashta u'bagalah was an encore.
Oh.
There are three ways of saying the same thing.
Right?
Hashta u'bagalah was an encore. Now, soon, and in a short time, right? A very interesting turn of phrase. There was a joke about that line, about, I think in the Haredi world, generally speaking, once women get married, you know, it's either bagalah or of Isman Kariv, either a baby in the carriage or they're expecting one soon. But the real meaning of hashta ba'agalah of Isman Kariv is three different ways of saying soon. I'm sure there is room for the darshan to explain the difference between what is hashta, what is bagalah of Isman Kariv. I had to guess, they're moving in greater distance in time. Hashta is really now, bagalah is soon, and Mizman Kariv is not too far from that. But bottom line is that's the word that's being used here. It's a pretty rare word. Before I learned this Gemara, you know, preparing for Shir, I mean, I've learned it before. If you would ask me to find another instance of bagalah, I could not pull one out of my head. But here you can add one to the list. So he says that he was crying because Shmuel was going to die soon, not immediately. La'agal ka'asis, you'll be coming soon. So then he said to his father, my taima achichas. Then why were you smiling, laughing? Why were you joyful? He said, the chashivas, fahai alma tuva. You will be very important in this world. You'll be held in high esteem in this world. So he said, Amar le, I chashivna, if I'm so important, then ailu ala levi. Then let them, on my behalf, let them let Levi into the yeshiva now. And ailu ala levi. And in fact, Shmuel got his request. So on Shmuel's behalf, they suspended or they terminated Levi's sentence. So then, finally, what's the purpose? Again, this is an there is so much to unpack, which I'm not going to unpack, but you can sort of, you know, at times that you wish to think about it in this story, finally says, Amar le zuze diyas mehehe. The reason why he came. Where is the money of the Yisomim? Amar le zil shaklenu. They were in the millstones. Now, he hid them in the press. So, where he says the following, Eli v'tatai didan, there must have been three bunches. The top one and the bottom one are ours. That belongs to you. But umitze, the one in the middle, is the yasa. The bunch in the middle belongs to the Yisomim. So, Amar Lei, Shmuel said to his father, my time is avdis hachi. Why did you place it that way? Amar le, iganuve ganze, mignavu medidan. If the ganavim come in haste and they steal something, they're likely only to steal the top ones that belong to us because they see a bunch of money, they grab it, they don't search further. And achla ara, if the ground consumes in the money, let's say causes it to tarnish and lose some of its value, then achla medidan, it will eat from ours. In other words, Avuah d'Shmuel, you know, took his responsibility as a guardian, as a protector for the Yisomim's money very seriously. He put his money faster in the way of harm than the money of the Yisomim. So Alma, bottom line is, biyadi. How did Shmuel's father know that Shmuel would be coming soon? Right? Bagalah doesn't mean, you know, tomorrow, but it means pretty soon. So if the Mason don't know what's going on in this world, how is it that possibly he could have known? So the Gemara says, Shani Shmuel, Kevan dechoshiv kadme umachrazi panumachal. No. In other words, when a very important person is going to be joining, so they don't, it's not the day before that day that they tell you that someone, that Duma makes an announcement. They have to make arrangements many, many days before to make sure, a number of days before, to make sure that you've cleared out space for the Adam Chashev who's coming. So maybe Shmuel was an exception. Okay. And then the Gemara says, the Af Rabbi Yonasan, who on the bottom of the previous Amud had been engaged in a fight with Rabbi Chia over this issue, Rabbi Chia insisted that the Mesim did know things, whereas Rabbi Yonasan said, the HaMesim Einam Yodim Uma, and Rabbi Chia hit him over the head and said, you need to learn again and again until you get shot right. So even Rabbi Yonasan, the Gemara claims, he changed his mind. Now, it's not explicit. The Gemara is going to claim this. The Amar of Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar of Yonasan. Minayim lemesim shemesafrin zezeh. How do you know that the dead can talk to one another? Shenemar, vayomer Hashem elav. When Moshe Rabbeinu was about to die, so God told him to go up on Har Nebo. He showed him the land. He says, Zos ha'aretz asher nishbati l'Avraham li'itzchaku li'Yakov le'mor. Why does it have to say that I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Lamor, you know, that I will give this land to your descendants? Just say, leave out the word Lamor. What is it at? My Lamor. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is part of Rabbi Yonasan's drasha. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Lemoshe. God says to Moses, Lech Emor Lahem, Li'Avram Li'Yitzchak Li'Yakov. Go tell the patriarchs, Shvua Shenishvati Lahem. The oath that I had promised to you about the Jewish people inheriting the land, Kfar Kiyamtia Livnechem. I have already fulfilled it to your children, presumably because they captured the land of Sichon and Og. Moshe Rabbeinu obviously didn't see them conquer Eretz Yisrael proper. But go tell them that I have fulfilled it. The East South of Mount. Now, if you ask me, I would have said that's because the Masons don't know. That's why Moshe had to go tell them, by the way, you should know that, that God fulfilled the promise that he made to your descendants. So the Gemara says, no, the Esau, the Daitech, the Loyadi, if the Avos didn't really know what was going on in this world, Ki Amar Lehu Mayhave, why would Moshe Rabbeinu's telling them make a difference? I don't, to be honest, and I don't see any of them in Mefarshim, I don't really understand what the Gemara's question is here. If they don't know, why would they not trust Moshe Rabbeinu? In other words, it's exactly because they don't know. God tested Moshe. Go tell them that I fulfilled the promise that I made to them. Rabbi Lichtstein?
Maybe it just simply means they're not aware of things, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu could not have informed them. You can only inform somebody who is involved in some way, and the Mesim are just Mesim. They're not alert and aware that you should be able to give them information.
But look at the previous story. Look at the story of the two spirits and the way the Gemara deals with it. Right? The Gemara does not regard that story as conclusive. Right? The Gemara assumes maybe Duma was Machriz, and that's how maybe someone died. Excuse me. And brought them that information. But the fact that the two Ruchos are talking to one another and getting this information of what's going to be would suggest that they are, I wouldn't say they're sentient, but maybe there's a barrier they can't see. They can't see through the Rakia. Let's term it that way. They can't see what's going on in this world. But the Gemara certainly does assume that, in other words, regardless of whether they know what's going on in the lower world, you know, in the physical world, nonetheless, they're capable of talking with one another. So that's why I'm not sure why the Gemara finds it so compelling. But the Gemara does ask, Ela mai biyadi. Okay, fine. So you want it your way. So they did know. So then it's a very simple question. Lama le lemeimar lehu. Why does, if the Avos know what's going on in this world, why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to go tell them? So the Gemara says, Lachzuke le tibusa le Moshe. You know, so they could go. Give thanks to Moshe. In other words, a favor to Moshe. The Avos will be more positively disposed towards you. Yes, they know. Like if you heard good news, you already knew. But someone comes to you and say, I got great news to tell you. And you tell them the news. So, I mean, they could say to you, well, I knew already. But they also might be great to you. You know, they understand that you were happy to bring them good news. So that's the reason why the Gemara suggests. So So it seems like, even though I'm not sure, I don't personally see why the riot is so compelling, the Gemara reaches the conclusion that the Mason do know, in fact, what's going on in this world. Okay. Anyway, so now the Gemara continues and says the following. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, call him the third line on your Testament Aleph. Call him Misaper Acharei HaMeis, Ke'ilu Misaper Acharei HaEvet. Someone who speaks ill of the dead as if he's talking about a stone. Means it makes it sound like it's not such a big deal. It has no impact. Ika da amri de lo yadi. There are those who say because the mace doesn't know. Ika da amri de lo yadi velo ichpas lehu. They know, but they don't care. Now this is interesting for two reasons. Number one, because it's clear the Gemara hasn't yet reached a definitive conclusion as to whether the mason really know. Because if the mason really know, then how can you say ika da amri de lo yadi? But the reason why it's being misaper on a stone is because the mason don't know, so no harm, no foul.
I wouldn't say that. I would say in their state, they do know, but it washes off them. It's of no relevance to them.
But that's the second line. That's the second, the Ika Amre. The Ika Amre is the Yade, but the Lo Ichbas Lahu. They know, but they don't care. Whereas in the the first lashon is that they really don't know. The second lashon to me is actually more interesting for a different reason, because every one of us is a human being, and every one of us has an ego of one size or another, we often, some of us, at least not all of us, get offended at certain things, whether we make a fuss or we don't make a fuss, but we certainly get offended. And I think that the second lashon of the Gemara actually sort of speaks volumes. So often we get offended and we think that we truly have been wronged. It's really a pagam in our dignity, and it really is deserving of some type of umbrage, of taking umbrage. And I think what the Gemara really suggests here is that a person who has divorced him or herself from the physical needs of the world, one's ego, and fulfilling all of one's needs, so an insult doesn't actually bother that person. I don't know that most of us can necessarily feel this way, but we can certainly act as if we feel that way. I remember Dr. Lamb, Zichrono Levracha, used to say about the Rav, that the Rav didn't respond to many of the insults that were hurled his way, and his comment was because giants aren't bothered by flies. Now, I don't know what the Rav, I wasn't zochet to know the Rav, I don't know what the Rav felt personally, but clearly the appropriate way certainly to behave initially is externally, is to not to respond to those things and not to take offense, and not to be bothered by it. Working on it internally requires a much greater level of midas chasidus, but obviously that's the aspiration, that it should be the yadi, v'lo ichpas lehu. They don't care. That's a challenge. Anyway, so the bottom line of this Gemara, at least, is the Gemara seems to see me, misafer achar meis, is like, whatever, it's not a big deal, because the meis either doesn't know, don't know, don't care. It might be the expression. Now, of course, there is a popular expression of not, Chazal have a meshivin es ha'ari la'achar misa. Right? You can't respond to the lion after he's dead. It's like, it's not a big deal to come up with a response. That's even an argumentation, after the person died because they're not there to respond. I don't want to say it's exactly an equivalent, but there's a more common expression, I suspect it's not in Yiddish, but it's really a Yiddish expression, which is achrei mois kedoshim emor. Which is, after they die, you don't talk about them in certain ways. But the Gemara suggests here that it's thing like Misafer, Achrei Evan. So now the Gemara says, is that really true on the sixth line? V'ha'amar Papa Chad Ishtoi Milsa Basrei de Mar Shmuel. Somebody spoke ill of Mar Shmuel, the Shmuel we just spoke about previously. And V'nafal Kanya Mitalola Ubaza La'arnika Demoche. A beam, a kana, fell out of the talala. Talala, the word for sukkah in Aramaic is mitalalta. The word is tes lamed lamed. The word is tsel. The root of tsel for shade is tzavi lamed lamed. We actually have it in this week's parsha, I believe. Sar silam me'alehem. And from that dagesh in the lamed, that pattern, it's tzadi lamed lamed. So mitalalta is a sukkah. The sukkah refers to the schach, not the walls. So a kanya from the talala fell down and literally cracked his skull in half, meaning he was punished by the divine for speaking ill of the dead. So the Gemara says, Shani tzuver mirabanan, the kudsha brichu tava beyikare. It's different by a Talmud Chacham because the offense is not only speaking against the person, but it's a bizayon ha-Torah, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this case is toveya, the elbone. He demands, he has to avenge the insult to the Talmud Chacham.
Like the end of the parsha yesterday. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Tovea, the elbone of Moshe.
Right. Okay. So, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kol HaMesaper Achar Mitosan Shel Tamidei Chachamim, Nofel B'Gehenna. Anyone who speaks, now the simple reading of Achar Mitosan means after the death of. There is the Ritva, I think, offers another possible interpretation. But the simple reading is after the Talmud Chacham has died. Shenemar, as it is said, Vahamatim Akalkalosam. The simple reading of this means those who go off the path. They're mate into crooked paths. So those people, Yolichem Hashem Espoa Leha Oven, God will make them walk along with those people who commit iniquities. And Shalom al Yisrael. And I guess there will be peace upon the rest of the Jewish people. That's the simple reading of the pasuk. But Chazal read it, that Hamatim Akalkalosam is those who speak ill and those who distort and cast aspersions on the ways of the tzaddikim. God will take them, will make them go walk amongst the perpetrators of iniquity and Shalom al Yisrael. And the Gemara explains, Afilu b'shash Shalom al Yisrael. Even someone who speaks ill of the Talmud Chacham when he's dead, when there's Shalom al Yisrael, but there's no danger to him anymore, still Yolichem Hashem es Palalei Ha'aved. God will still punish such a person. And then the Gemara concludes this section, which might be the rationale, which a person might speak ill of the Talmud Chacham because they're not a good person, or because maybe the Talmud Chacham did something that might have been wrong. So now the Gemara says, Tana de Bei Rabbi Yishma, Im Ra'isa Talmud Chacham She'avar Avera Balayla, Al Taharer Acharav Bayom, Shema Osa Tshuva. As we'll see in a second, this means if you see a Talmud Chacham who violates something which is Bein Adam Lamakom, not Bein Adam L'Chaver, the Gemara will comment on this in a second, you should not, cast doubt upon the person. You should assume that maybe they did Tshuva the next day. The Gemara says, maybe. No, you should assume they definitely they would have done shuvah. Unfortunately, this isn't always true. Unless one, of course, subscribes to a theory that a number of the Rishonim put forth, that we don't have the din of Talmud Chacham bisman hazeh. There are a number of areas in halacha where Talmidei Chacham are given certain prerogatives. And there are a number of places where the Rishonim would say, we don't have such a Talmud Chacham as that. We don't have anybody who's on that level. So anyway, the Gemara says, the Hani Mili, the place where you should just assume for sure, you just give them the benefit of the doubt, even with no further information, is Bidvarim Shebegufo. Bidvarim Shebegufo, meaning they're personal things. There's no harm to anybody else. Avo b'mamona ad'mahad l'mare. Said, until there's reason to think that he has returned the money to the owner, when he's committed some type of damage to somebody else, stolen from somebody else, so then he doesn't get the clean slate until you know that he has actually made good on the on his debts, if we might call it that. Okay. The Gemara now has one last section related to what we were just dealing with now, which is Mesafer Achar Mitosan Shel Tamidei Chachamim, someone who might cast aspersions on the dead. Rabbi Lichtenstein?
When, if I could add something about Mesafer Achar Mitoso, you indicated that one explanation of it is not just that speaking ill of a person after the person died, but perhaps speaking ill of a person when you're following his body. when you're being malave the mace, when you're, in other words, when you're at the funeral. And I wonder whether they weren't a little bit concerned that at a funeral, everybody speaks so highly of the deceased. And somebody might very well be moved to say, yeah, that's all so. However, you know, the whole idea of don't even speak good about people because the response is going to be the person's not that good. I have a feeling that there is a little bit of Sipur Achar Mitaso at funerals or post-funerals, just because of human nature. And, yes. And this is the statement, be careful, because anybody who does that deserves to be in Gehenna.
So I think that your interpretation is that shot after they die, meaning Achar Mitaso means when you're following the bed. And what you said is probably pshat. The other interpretation that I've seen is mitasan doesn't mean their deathbed. It means it's a lashon of hataya, of having gone astray. And the Ritva says that's the next line, that tana ve'rav isham, ra'isa tama chacham, sh'avar ve'rav alayda. In other words, that's mitasa. He had gone astray in this language of nata.
Nata min adera.
Yes, because the root, even though I don't know what its relevance is, because it's not a verb, presumably the root of the word mitah is nun tesyud. Probably because you lie down on it. You lie on your side on it. So the other interpretation the Ritva offers is mitasan, I would say almost matasan or matayasan, shel tamachacham. So that's the other one. But I think what you said is the correct interpretation of the first shot. Okay. All right. So now the Gemara is going to begin a last section, talking about the question of what's known as nidui. We more often encounter the term cherem. When you excommunicate someone, we often talk about putting somebody in cherem. The origin of that term, the Gemara in Moed Katan, my Rebbe Rav Shechter likes to quote this a lot when he talks about the word cherem, what a cherem is. The Gemara says it's nichnas in the ramach evarim. A cherem is basically a curse of someone. It's a curse that they should drop dead. And it's a curse that enters in the cherem, in the 248 evarim. The term cherem is used in Tanakh, in effect, to refer to, I would almost say, consecrating something to be killed. And we talk about the cherem that Achan violated, the cherem at the end of Parshas Bukkosai, kol cherem asher yocharam min ha'adam lo yipadeh, mos yumas. That is a very, very difficult pasuk to understand. There's a very important Ramban on that who invented a new din. He didn't invent a new din, but he pointed to how that pasuk, which as far as I know is not discussed in Chazal, was interpreted in the biblical period that you would kill somebody who violated a cherem. And there is this idea of a cherem, which is a cursing somebody. Now, we use the term cherem, you put somebody in cherem, it means you excommunicate them. And that may be that a person who's cut off from the community, in effect, is like they're dead. A person's life has to be connected to community. A person who is cut off, someone who's in cherem, is very similar to another individual who's considered to be dead in halacha, and that's a mitzora. Right? A mitzora also sits mechutz lamachana, Tamei Tamei Yikra, he doesn't sit in the company of other people. Chazal say that there are Baruch Hashuv and Kadesh, and one of them is a Mitzora. So that's the idea of Cherem. Cherem is basically cutting someone off from the community, and that's almost a form of death. There is a lesser form, a temporary Cherem, which could morph into a full Cherem, that's referred to as Nidui. Now, the term nidoi, I assume, is based upon to be minadeh someone, means to probably cast someone out. Sometimes the word nida means something that is meruchak. That's the Targum's translation of nida. Sometimes it's meruchakta. It means to be cast away, cast aside. Maybe related to the word to sprinkle when you throw something, lahazos. So we have a lesser form that is known as nidui. It doesn't come up very much in the Mishnah, but there are a few places. And that's what the Gemara's focus is going to be here, because one of them happens to be misaper achar mitosan shel tamidei chachamim. So the Gemara now says the following on the fifth wide line on Yotes Amar Aleph. The Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, v'chof dal le mekomos, beizdin min adin al kavod harab. There are 24 places where we find it mentioned that beizdin excommunicates someone for violating kavod haTorah. V'kulon shoninu b'mishnasenu. All them are mentioned in our Mishnah. Amar le Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Heicha, where are they? Now, presumably behind the question is Rabbi Elazar's sense is that Nidui doesn't come up that often in the Mishnah. The idea, you have 24 places, it brings to mind the comment that Gemara has in Bava Metzia at the end of the fourth parak, that in, I think, 37 places the Torah warns against ono'as hager, against afflicting the convert. So the truth is the Torah does warn in a number of places, but 37, I don't know if anybody knows where all 37 places are. So this 24.
And by the way, it's 36.
36.
And Yeshom Rim, 46.
46. So I don't even know how you could get to 36. I'm not even sure how I could get to 18. The bottom line is, Rav Lazar probably bothered that. So Rav Shimon Levi says, go chaser Mishnah Yashas. So what happened? Nafat Duck V'Ashkach. Boss, he found three. He went out, inspected, and he found three. What were the three? Hamizalzel B'Netilas Yadayim. Now, I know you're probably scratching your head about this one, but you'll see why, where this comes up. Not today. We'll just finish the opening statement here. So the first one is if you disparage and are mizalzel the mitzvah, the rabbinic mitzvah of netilas yadayim, that indicates a profound lack of respect for talmidei chachamim. V'hamisaper achar mitosan shel talmidei chachamim, which is what we've been speaking about until now. And finally, the hamegis dato klape mala, someone who behaves petulantly, I think is the best way to determine, to describe this, towards God, which is really not kavod harav. I mean, it's more than kavod harav. So he only found actually three mishnayos that fit this prototype. And now the Gemara is now going to go through each of those three. And then at the end, try to figure out, okay, well, where did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi come up with 24 from. It happens to be that this sugya is a lot of fun because there are a couple of very, very interesting stories that are cited in which the mention of nidui, this mini excommunication, is actually mentioned. I'll stop here. I'll take any questions. There was a question I saw popped up in the chat about the word nida, and the answer is probably it's the same root and the same meaning. Unlike today, Chazal had a very, I don't want to use the term humane, but a much more person-friendly and woman-friendly understanding of what the institution of Nida was. But the Gemara in Nida actually mentions that in the earlier years, until Rabbi Akiva came along, so a wife who was in Nida was basically Nida, she was an outcast, she didn't dress up, she didn't put on makeup and so on. Until Rabbi Akiva came along and he darshan no, that basically that she would be benidasa just meant that to hey benidasa shetavah b'mayim, that a woman remains in nida until she goes to the mikveh, no matter how long it's been since she got her period, doesn't matter. But there's no idea that a nida is supposed to behave in a way to be unappealing to her husband, that she's supposed to be an outcast. But yes, probably the meaning of the word originally probably is the very same meaning. any other questions? Have I looked at
it? Yeah. Not a question, but just to support on what you said before, that today we don't know what a real Talmud Chacham is. They had a Talmud Chacham is somebody really special. We don't know who the Talmidei Chachamim are. So I heard Rav Soloveitchik explain that's why when somebody benches Gomel, one is supposed to do it, A, in a minyan, Because the Pasuk in Tehillim says, V'yiromamuha v'kahal am. You need a kahal am, a minyan. And then it says, V'moshav zekenim, I think yishabchuhu. They praise him in the presence of zekenim, which is Talmid Chachamim. And the Rav says, we don't know if we're around Talmid Chachamim today. We don't know what a Talmud Chacham is. Therefore, we do it with a Sefer Torah there, because certainly the Sefer Torah is a Talmud Chacham.
Interesting. I think the Gemara says, I thought it was in that context, and two of them are supposed, no, it's supposed to be a minyan, and two of them are supposed to be Talmidei Chacham, because of Moshav Zekenim Yehallelu. So now the Rav, you're saying the Rav said that, that's why we did the Friends Sefer Torah. Okay?
Right.
Very good. Any other questions?
So just a public service announcement for all of the students on the line that, an invitation to learn in person at KJ next Sunday, June the 6th. We're going to start here at approximately 9:10 a.m. in the Major Ward Chapel Library, which is one flight down from the lobby at 125 East 85th Street. Again, that's 125 East 85th Street. Shacharit is in the main synagogue at 8:30 in the morning and ends around 9:05. So we'll begin the shiur at around 9:10. And that is as well when the live stream, the Zoom connectivity will be established, also at 9:10 a.m. So for those who would like to gather in person, it will be a rare treat to do so, and we will have breakfast, as we were wont to do before COVID struck. And for those who cannot make it and who prefer the Zoom connection, we will be offering that as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rabbi.